This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Influence of the Dead on Destiny. This is lecture 4, entitled The Rhythmical Relationship of the Human Being with the Universe and with the World of the Dead, given in Dornach on December 11th, 1917. We shall now discuss a very wide subject, and today we will not be able to deal with it as extensively as I would have liked. In these considerations, I would like to give you a basis for the understanding of freedom and necessity, so that you may see what must be considered from an esoteric point of view, in order to understand the course of the social, historical, and ethical moral life of the human being. In previous lectures, I emphasized that between birth and death we only experience in a waking manner what we perceive through the senses, through our sense impressions, and in our thoughts. We dream through in the life of our feelings, and we sleep through everything present in the will impulses as deeper necessity and reality. In the life of our feelings and of our will, we live in the same spheres with the so-called dead. Let us first form a conception of what is really behind the life of our senses from an exterior perspective. We can picture the sense impressions as if they were spread out before us like a carpet. Of course, we must imagine that this carpet also contains the impressions of all of the 12 senses, such as we know them through anthroposophy. This carpet of sense impressions covers a reality lying behind the senses to a certain extent. This reality lying behind the sense perceptions must not be imagined as the scientist imagines the world of atoms, nor as a certain philosophical, quote, thing in itself, close quote. In my public lectures, I have emphasized that when we look for the thing in itself, as is done by modern philosophers such as Kant, this would be similar to breaking a mirror to find the reality of the beings we see in the mirror. I do not speak in this sense of something physical behind the sense perceptions. What I mean is something spiritual in which we ourselves are embedded, but that we cannot reach with our usual consciousness between birth and death. If we could reach the first stage of spiritually solving the riddle contained in the carpet of sense perceptions, so that outside we could see more than the manifold impressions of our sense impulses, what would we see at this first stage? Let us look into this question. The first thing we can see will surprise us. A number of forces, all aimed at permeating with impulses our entire life, from our birth, rather from conception, to our death. When trying to solve the riddle of this carpet of sense impressions, we do not see our life in its single events, but we see its entire organization or nature. At first we would not find anything so strange. In this first stage we find ourselves not as we are now in this moment, but as we are throughout our entire life on earth. This life, which does not extend as far as our physical body, and therefore cannot be perceived with the physical senses, permeates our etheric body, our body of formative forces, so that our body of formative forces is essentially the expression of this life. If the carpet of sense impressions were to tear, as it were, and we tear it when we ascend to spiritual vision, we would find our own self as it is organized for this current incarnation on earth. But as I stated, the senses cannot perceive this. How can we perceive this? We already possess what is necessary, but at a stage of development that does not yet make real perception possible. What we would thus perceive cannot reach the EYEI or the ear. It cannot enter any sense organ. Instead, please understand this clearly, it is breathed in, drawn in with the breath. The etheric foundation of our lung, not the physical lung, for the lung, as such, is not a real organ of perception, is really an organ of perception. However, between birth and death, we cannot use it as an organ of perception for what we breathe in. The air we breathe in, meaning every breath of air, and how it enters the whole rhythm of our life, really contains our deeper reality between birth and death. But here on the physical plane, the foundation of our entire lung system is in an unfinished condition and has not yet achieved the capacity of perception. If we were to investigate what constitutes its etheric foundation and grasp it correctly, we would find that the lung is in reality exactly the same thing as our brain and sense organs are physically for the physical world. In the foundation of our lung system, we have a brain in an earlier stage of evolution. We might say in an infant-like stage of evolution. Also in this connection, we bear a second human being within us to an extent. I say specifically to an extent. It will not be wrong if you imagine that you also possess an etheric head. It is just that this etheric head cannot yet be used as an organ of perception in our everyday life. Yet it has the possibility of perceptive capacity for what lies behind and creates the body. However, what lies behind the etheric body as creative force is the element that we enter when we pass through the portal of death. Then we lay aside the etheric body, but we enter into what created and produced this body of formative forces. Perhaps it may be difficult to imagine this, but it will be good if you try to think this out to the end. We could make this clearer with a diagram. Let us imagine the physical organization of the head and lung, red in the diagram. From the cosmos come impulses, blue arrows, that express themselves rhythmically in the movements of the lungs. Through our lungs, we are related to the entire universe, and the entire universe works on our etheric body. When we pass through the portal of death, we lay aside the etheric body, but enter what is active in our lung system, and this is connected with the entire universe. This accounts for the remarkable consonance to be found in the rhythm of human life and the rhythm of breathing. I've already explained that when we calculate the number of breaths we draw in one day, we obtain 25,920 breaths per day on the basis of 18 breaths a minute, hence 18 times 60 times 24. We breathe in and breathe out, which constitutes our smallest rhythm to start with. Then there is another rhythm in life, as I have already explained before. Every morning, when we awake, we breathe into our physical system, as it were, our soul nature, the astral body and the I capital, and we breathe them out again when we fall asleep. We do this during our whole life. Let us take an average length of life of 71 years. Then we can make the following calculation. We breathe in and breathe out our own being 365 times a year. If we take 71 years as the average length of human life, we obtain 25,915. You see, it is more or less the same number. Of course, the length of life differs for each human being. We find that in the life between birth and death, we breathe in and out what we call our actual self 25,920 times. Thus we may say, we have the same relationship with the world as that of the breath we draw in and the elements around us. We live in the same rhythm in relation to the cosmos and our breathing. Again, if we take our life of approximately 71 years and call it a cosmic day, we obtain a cosmic year by multiplying this by 365. The result is 25,915, again, approximately 1 year. In 25,920 years, the sun returns again to the same constellation of the zodiac. If the sun is in Aries in a certain year, it will rise again in Aries after 25,920 years. In the course of 25,920 years, the sun moves through the entire zodiac. Thus, when an entire human life is breathed out into the cosmos, This is a cosmic breath, in exactly the same relationship to the cosmic course of the sun through the zodiac as one human breath is to one day in human life. Here we have deep inner lawfulness. Everything is built up on rhythm. We breathe in a threefold way, or at least we are placed into the breathing process in a threefold way. First, we breathe through our lungs in the region of the elements. This rhythm is contained in the number 25,920. Then we breathe within the entire solar system by taking sunrise and sunset as parallel to our falling asleep and awaking. Throughout our life, we breathe in a rhythm that is again contained in the number 25,920. Finally, the cosmos breathes us in and out, again in a rhythm determined by the number 25,920, the sun's course through the zodiac. Thus we stand within the whole visible universe. At its foundation lies the invisible universe. When we pass through the portal of death, we enter this invisible cosmos. Rhythmical life lies at the foundation of our feeling life. We enter the rhythmical life of the cosmos in the time between death and a new birth. This rhythmical life lies behind the carpet woven by our senses as what determines our etheric life. If we had clairvoyant consciousness, we would see this cosmic rhythm that is, as it were, a rhythmical, surging cosmic ocean, now of an astral nature. In this rhythmically surging astral ocean, we find the so-called dead and the beings of the higher hierarchies. And we find the true reality of what belongs to us but is beneath the threshold of waking consciousness, from which arise only the feelings we dream through and the will impulses we sleep through. We may ask comparatively, and without becoming teleological, why a wise cosmic guidance has arranged matters so that we, such as we are between birth and death, cannot perceive the rhythmical life behind the carpet of the senses. Why is the human head, the hidden head that corresponds to the lung system, not suitable for an adequate perception? This leads us to a truth kept secret right into our time by schools of esotericism, because other secrets are connected with it that must not be, or should not have been, revealed until now. But in our time such things must be brought to the consciousness of humanity. The esoteric schools, inaugurated here and there, keep such things secret for reasons that will not be explained today. They will keep them secret, although today these things must be brought to light. Since the last third of the 19th century, what schools of esotericism have kept back, unjustifiably in many cases, becomes obsolete. This is connected with the event of the autumn of 1879. Right now we can lift only the outer veil of this mystery, but even this outer veil is one of the most important pieces of knowledge concerning the nature of the human being. We truly bear within us the head of a second human being, as well as a body, and this body is at first the body of an animal. This second human being possesses a properly formed head, but attached to it is the body of an animal, a real centaur. The centaur is an etheric truth. It is important to bear in mind that active in this being is a relatively great wisdom, connected with the entire cosmic rhythm. The centaur's head sees the cosmic rhythm that permeates us during our existence between death and a new birth. It is the cosmic rhythm that has been shown in a threefold way, even numerically, which is the foundation of many secrets of the cosmos. This etheric head is much wiser than our physical head. All human beings bear within them another, far wiser human being, the centaur. Yet at the same time, in spite of its wisdom, this centaur has all the wild instincts of the animals. Now you will understand the wise guidance of the cosmos. Human beings could not be given a consciousness that is, on the one hand, strong and able to see through the cosmic rhythm, and on the other hand, uncontrolled and full of wild instincts. But the centaur's animal nature, please connect this with what I have told you in other lectures dealing with this subject from another point of view, is tamed and conquered in the next incarnation, during its passage through the world of cosmic rhythms between death and a new birth. What lies hidden at the foundation of our lung system in the present incarnation appears as our physical head in the next incarnation, although dulled down to an understanding limited to the senses. The centaur of this incarnation is the human being endowed with sense perception in the next incarnation. And now you will be able to grasp something else. You will understand why I said that during our existence between death and a new birth, the animal realm is our lowest realm, and that we must conquer its forces. We must transform the centaur, the animal in us, into a human nature for the next incarnation. This work requires a real knowledge, embracing the impulses of the whole animal realm. In the age of Chiron, human beings possessed this knowledge atavistically, in a weaker form. Although the knowledge of which Chiron spoke is weaker in this incarnation, it is of the same kind. Now, you see why human beings need this lower realm between death and a new birth. We must master it. We need it because we must transform the centaur into a human being. What anthroposophy sets forth has been attained only in individual instances outside the schools for esotericism. However, there have always been a few human beings who discovered these things, as if in flashes. Especially in the 19th century, a few individual spirits had an inkling, so to speak, that something with wild instincts that have been tamed can be found in the human being. Some writers speak of this, and the way that they speak of these things shows how this knowledge frightens them. High spiritual truths cannot be gained with the same ease as scientific truths that can be digested so comfortably by the mind. Sometimes the reality of these high truths scares us. In the 19th century, some people were both frightened and tremendously moved when they discovered what speaks out of the sometimes wild gaze of a human eye, EYE, or out of something else in the human being. One of the writers of the 19th century expressed himself in an extreme manner by saying that each of us really bears a murderer within us. He meant this centaur, of whom he was dimly conscious. It must be emphasized again and again that human nature contains enigmas that must gradually be solved. We must contemplate these things courageously and calmly, but they must not become trivial, because they make human consciousness approach the great solemnity of life. It is now our task to see the solemnity of life, to see the serious things that are approaching and that announce themselves in such terrible signs. This is one aspect, preparing the way for certain considerations that we will continue soon. The other aspect is as follows. Human beings pass through the portal of death. Last time I mentioned how different the entire way of experiencing things becomes after death, by showing you that what we communicate to the dead comes as if out of the dead themselves, and what the deceased tell us comes as if out of the depths of our own being. In communication with the dead, the reciprocal relationships are reversed. Here on earth you can hear yourself speaking to the other human beings. You hear what you tell them, and you hear what they tell you. When you communicate with the dead, their words rise out of your own soul, and what you tell them reaches you like an echo coming from the dead. You cannot hear what you tell them as something coming from yourself. You hear this as something coming from them. I wanted to give this as an example of the great difference between the physical world, where we live between birth and death, and the world we live in between death and a new birth. We look into this world when we contemplate it from a certain standpoint. When we look through the carpet woven by our senses, we look into the rhythm of the world. However, this rhythm has two aspects. I will show you these two aspects of the rhythm in a diagram by drawing here a number of stars or planets, the planetary system, if you like, belonging to our Earth. Human beings pass through this planetary system in the time between death and a new birth. A printed cycle of lectures contains details on these things. However, as human beings pass through the world, that is, still the visible world, they also come, between death and a new birth, into the world that is no longer visible, or even spatial. These things are difficult to describe, because when we imagine anything here in the physical world, we imagine it spatially. Yet beyond the sense-perceptible world lies a world that is no longer spatial. In a diagram, I must illustrate this spatially. The ancients said that beyond the planets lies the sphere of the fixed stars. This is expressed wrongly, but this does not matter now. And beyond that lies the supersensible world. The ancients pictured it spatially, but that is merely an illustration of that world. When we have entered this supersensible world in the time between death and a new birth, we can say, even though again rendered pictorially, that we are then beyond the stars, and the stars themselves serve for a kind of reading. Between death and a new birth, we use the stars as a kind of text. Let us make this really clear. How do we read here on Earth? We have approximately 12 consonants and 7 vowels with various variations. We arrange these letters in many ways into words. Think how a typesetter mixes the letters together in order to form words. All the words consist of the specific letters that we possess. For the dead, the fixed stars of the zodiac and the planets are what letters are for us here on the physical plane. The fixed stars of the zodiac are the consonants, and the planets are the vowels. Between birth and death, we see from the center outward to the periphery. Beyond the starry heavens, the dead see from the periphery. It is most difficult of all to imagine that things are reversed after death, so that we see from the periphery, that we are really in the circumference and see the stars of the zodiac, the consonants, and the planets, the vowels, from outside. We look from outside at the events taking place on Earth. Depending on which part of our being we enliven, we look down on the Earth through Taurus and Mars, or we look through Taurus in between Mars and Jupiter. We must not picture this from the earthly standpoint, but reversed, for we are looking down onto the Earth. When we are dead and circle around the Earth, we read with the help of the starry system, but we must picture this kind of reading differently. We could read words during life in another way, but it would be more difficult technically than our present reading system. We could read in such a way that we have letters placed one after the other, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and so on, or instead of arranging them in the type case, we could read in the following way. If the word he is to be read, a ray of light falls on H and E. If, quote-unquote, goes is to be read, a ray falls on G, O, E, S and S. The sequence of the letters could already be there, and they could be illuminated as required. It would not be arranged so comfortably from a technical aspect, but you can picture an earthly life where a reading is arranged this way. An alphabet is there, and there would be some device that illuminates one letter at a time, then we can read the sequence of the illuminated letters, and obtain as a result Goethe's Faust, for instance. This cannot be imagined so easily, yet it is possible to imagine it, is it not? The dead read in such a way that with the aid of the starry system, the fixed stars remain immobile, but the dead themselves move. The fixed stars remain still and the dead move around. If they are to read Leo above Jupiter, they move around in such a way that Leo stands above Jupiter. The dead connect the stars, just as we connect H and E in order to read, quote-unquote, he. This reading of earthly conditions from the cosmos, to which the invisible cosmos belongs, consists in this: that the dead can read what lies spiritually at the foundation of the stars. It is only that the entire system is based on rest or immobility. The entire divine system of reading from out of the cosmos is based on immobility. This means that according to the intentions of certain beings of the higher hierarchies, the planets should be stationary. Then the being engaged in reading would be the only one moving about. The events on the earth could be read rightly from the cosmos if the planets were immobile. But they are not immobile. Why not? They would be immobile if only the spirits of form, the exousiae, had created the world. But the Luciferic spirits interfered and participated in this work, as you already know. Luciferic spirits brought to the earth what had been law during the old moon period of the earth, where certain things governed by the spirits of motion transferred to the power of the spirits of form. Luciferic spirits brought this system of movement to the earth from the old moon period and brought the planets into a specific movement in the cosmic spaces. In a certain respect, this disturbed the order created by the Elohim. We must learn to know this Luciferic element between death and a new birth, so that we can, so to speak, remove what comes from the movement of the planets or the moving stars from what we read. We must draw this out. Then we will obtain the right result. Indeed, between death and a new birth, we learn a great deal about the working and weaving of the Luciferic element in the cosmos. This is the other side that I wished to point out. From this you see the connection between the life between death and a new birth and our life here. We might say that the world has two aspects. Here, between birth and death, we see one aspect through our senses. And between death and a new birth, we see it from the reversed side with the eye of the soul. And between death and a new birth, we learn to read the conditions here on earth in relationship with the spiritual world. Try to realize this. Try to put yourself into these conditions. Then you will have to confess that it is indeed deeply significant to say that the world, which we first learn to know through our senses and our understanding, is an illusion, or Maya. As soon as we approach the real world, we find that the world we perceive through our senses is related to this real world in the same way that a reflection in the mirror is related to the living reality before the mirror. If you see several forms reflected in a mirror, this shows that there are forms outside the mirror which are reflected by it. Suppose that you look into the mirror as a disinterested spectator. Rudolf Steiner draws this, but no diagram is available. In the mirror, you see the three figures that I have drawn here fight against each other. This shows that the mirrored figures do something, but you cannot say that figure A in the mirror beats figure B within the mirror. What you see in the mirror is the image of the fighting, because the figures outside the mirror are doing something. If you believe that A there, in the mirror, or the reflected image of A, does something to B there within the mirror, you are quite mistaken. You cannot set up relationships and connections between the reflected images, but you can only say what is reflected in the mirrored images points to something in the world of reality, which is reflected. Yet our sense-perceptible world is a mirror, a Maya, and in this world people speak of causes and effects. When they speak of causes and effects in this world, it is just as if they were to believe that the mirrored image A beats the mirrored image B. Something happens among the real beings, reflected by the mirror, but the impulses leading to the fight cannot be found in the mirrored A and in the mirrored B. Something happens among the real beings, reflected by the mirror, but the impulses leading to the fight cannot be found in the mirrored A and in the mirrored B. Investigate nature and its laws, and you will find at first what appears to your senses a maya, a reflecting element, or a mirrored image. The reality lies beneath the boundary that I have indicated to you, the boundary between the life of thought and the life of feelings. Even your own reality is not contained at all in your waking consciousness. Your own reality is contained within the spiritual reality that submerges the dreaming and sleeping forces of feeling and will. Thus it is nonsense to speak of a causal necessity in the world of Maya, and it is also nonsense to speak of cause and effect in the course of history. It is real nonsense. To this I would like to add that it is nonsense to say that the events of 1914 are the result of events in 1913, 1912, and so on. This is just as clever as saying that this A in the mirror is a bad fellow because he beats the poor B there within the mirror. What matters is to find the true reality, and this lies beneath the threshold that must be crossed in going down into the world of feeling and of will, and that does not enter our usual waking consciousness. And the centaur that I have described lives there. You see, we must grasp in a different way the idea that something that had to happen was necessary. We cannot interpret it as ordinary historians or scientists do. We must ask, who are the real beings that produced the events of a later period following an earlier one? The preceding historical events are merely the mirrored reflections. They cannot be the cause of what took place subsequently. This again is one side of the question. The other side will be clear to you if you realize that the waking reality embraced by our thoughts and sense perceptions only contains illusion or maya. This maya cannot be the real cause of anything. However, pure thoughts can determine our actions. This fact can be experienced if we are not led to deeds by passions, desires, and instincts, but by clear thoughts. Pure ideas can be the impulses of human actions. Yet ideas in and of themselves cannot accomplish anything. I can carry out an action under the influence of a pure idea, but the idea itself cannot do anything. In order to understand this, compare the idea with the mirrored image. The reflection in the mirror cannot cause you to run away. It must be that it displeases you, or something is there that has nothing to do with the reflection in the mirror if you run away. The reflection in the mirror cannot take a whip and cause you to run away. This image cannot be the cause of anything. When human beings fulfill actions under the influence of their reflected image, that is, their thoughts, they fulfill them out of Maya. They carry out their actions out of the cosmic mirror. They are the ones who carry out the actions, and for this reason they act freely. However, when they are led by their passions, their actions are not free. They are not free, even if they are led by their feelings. They are free when they are led by their thoughts, that are mere reflections or mirrored images. For this reason, I have explained in my title, Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, also known as a Philosophy of Freedom, that human beings can act freely and independently if they are guided by pure thinking, because pure thoughts cannot cause or do anything, so that the causal force must come from somewhere else. I illustrated this with the same image again in my book titled The Riddle of Humanity, Collected Works 170. We are free human beings precisely because we carry out actions under the influence of Maya. Because this Maya, the world immediately around us, cannot bring about or cause anything. Our freedom is based on the fact that the world we perceive is Maya. We unite our being with Maya and thus become free beings. If the world we perceive were a reality, this reality would compel us, and we would not be free. We are free beings just because the world we perceive is not a reality, and for this reason it cannot force us to do anything, just as a mirrored reflection cannot force us to run away. The secret of the free human being is the understanding of the connection of the world, perceived as Maya, the mere reflection of a reality, and the impulses coming from human beings themselves. We must ourselves give the impetus to action if we are not induced to action by something influencing us. Freedom can be proved quite clearly if the proofs are sought on the basis that the world we perceive is a mirrored reflection and not a reality. These are the preparatory ideas that I wished to speak to you about, concerning what lies at the foundation of human nature, the part of human nature that can perceive reality, that has not attained the required maturity in one incarnation, but that must be weakened in order to become human in the next incarnation. The centaur, found beneath the threshold of consciousness, would be able to perceive truth and reality, but it cannot yet perceive. What we perceive today is not yet a reality. But human beings can let themselves be determined by that part of their being that is no longer, or is not yet, a centaur. Then their actions will be those of free beings. The secret of our freedom is intimately connected with the taming of our centaur nature. This centaur nature is contained in us so that it is chained and fettered, so that we may not perceive the reality of the centaur, but only the Maya. If we let ourselves be impelled by Maya, we are free. This is looked upon from one side. From the other side, we learn to know the world between death and a new birth. What otherwise surrounds us as the universe shrivels, and what enables us to read in the cosmos is reflected in the physical letters. The fact that many languages contain a larger number of letters today is due to the different nuances, but essentially there are 12 consonants, such as in the Finnish language, and 7 vowels, plus some with different nuances. The various nuances or shadings in the vowels were added by the luciferic element. What causes the vowels to move corresponds to the movement of the planets. Thus you can see the connection between what exists in human life on a small scale, the reading of the letters that are here on the paper, and what lives outside in the cosmos. Human beings are born out of the cosmos, and are not only the result of what preceded them in the line of heredity. These are some of the foundations that will enable us to gradually reach real conceptions of freedom and necessity in the historical, social, and ethical moral course of events. The end of Lecture 4.